Welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast, and I'm Coach Brent Williams. The VA Tourism Podcast is dedicated to Africa's travel and tourism industry, where leaders from the private and public sectors get to talk to us. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. In this episode, Chinisaya Mangoma, a trade lawyer and creative economy strategist from Zimbabwe, is leading advocates for the development of a robust African creative economy strategy. Chinisaya identifies collaboration as a key ingredient in growing the creative industry. Good morning and welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast. And my guest today is Chinisaya Mangoma. Chinisaya is a social change agent and a trade lawyer leading the creative economy strategy and development in Zimbabwe. Hi, Chinisaya.
Hello. How are you doing, Kojo?
I'm well. Thank you for joining us. Tell us about your name. It sounds interesting.
I know, right? So my full name is Chinisaya Noreen. My first name is actually Noreen, and my second name is Chinisaya. But I suppose maybe growing up and being woke and really kind of coming in tune with who I am, Chinisaya stuck with me, and I'm using that as my preferred name. Chinisaya actually means she who brings light, she who clarifies. The name Noreen, interestingly, also means, which is, if Noreen is Irish, also means bring light. So I don't know, they say there's names, so perhaps this light is my...
Come with everything that in the law, in the creative arts, etc.
Yeah.
And which part of Zimbabwe are you from, if you want to be specific?
My father is from Mashingo, but I live in Marondera, which is a farming community out of Zimbabwe, a nice small town. And in the prime years, it was known as the major farming community of Zimbabwe.
Oh, okay. If just on that trajectory, tell us about yourself, what you do, and everything that you want us to know about you.
Sure, no problem. By profession and training, I am a trade and investment lawyer. I studied trade and investment in Africa. And then I left formal practice of law to join the creative industries. I think at that point, my yearning was to try to understand what it takes and what we need to do to set up micro to small enterprises in the creative industries. My grandmother was a trader, and she was a creative industries trader. And when she died with her business. And that always sat with me. And as becoming a trade lawyer, it made me realize that the potential is in us understanding what exactly the structures that are needed to build sustainable industries that can work to build generational businesses, intergenerational businesses. So in the work that I do, I have been in this space for about 5 years. I have built fashion brands, one called Chinisaya, the women's clothing, another called Pants Brothers, which is children's clothing. The idea of me building these brands was for me to get in touch, a clear understanding of, it was almost, if you look at it from an academic perspective, it was research. So I actually immersed myself in trying to gather the data and an understanding of the structures that are existing and the problems that small-scale micro-enterprises face. So I did that. All these brands still stand, not necessarily as profitable and as lucrative as I need them to be, but that's also the lessons that come in with learning the structures and the shortcomings of the micro-small enterprises in the creative industries.
Wow.
So... This led and all came together in the forming of what I call my entity, the holding company called Chinisaya Africa. At Chinisaya Africa, we are advocating for trade for development. And the work that we do is we get ourselves involved in different projects, particularly in the creative industries, that touch on systems thinking, the bigger issues in the creative industries. How do we change the systems? How do we change mindsets? What do we need to do strategically in order for us to transition to the places that we need to do? So some of the projects we've worked on with the UNDP, some of them we've worked with British Council. Currently we're working with a collective called Connected Sahara, which is a body that is working to connect an interconnected ecosystem in the creative industries. And our main thrust is, how do we connect all these players towards realizing value and creating an enabling environment for entrepreneurs in the creative industries?
Well, from what from the introduction, you really epitomize what Creative Arts stand for. Now, who qualifies to be in the creative arts sector?
So, you know, UNESCO has done, and this is not an easy definition, right? Yes. As we were talking, their form follows function, right? And creative industries, when you look at the UNESCO definition, it goes to heritage, which covers tourism. It goes to the arts, which covers the visual arts. It goes to the media, which covers the realm of media, the fashion designers, and all sorts of things. So really, the creative economy, when you want to look at the creative industries, is the thought leader economy. It's really tied in there with heritage. It's the celebration of local commodities, the commodifying of our cultures and our social experiences, and putting these things consistently on the market, innovating around practices that others want to learn from. So that's why it covers from the range from the tourism mm-hmm. right through to the media, because it's a whole value chain.
But again, I mean, depending on the country, sometimes they define the scope based on their on their national laws, right?
Yeah, and this is where we bring in the discussion about form follows function. I think it is very important to understand that value chains work. And when we separate things that naturally need to be working together, we don't realize their full potential. And there's no way you can separate tourism from the creative industries, because the creative industries and tourism are synergized by the sheer message that they're trying to communicate. So as much as different countries will define them in different ways and based on their scope, I want to challenge that definition to say, does it work to create a value chain that will work to create the industries?
Okay, interesting. Now, with your with your works in the creative arts sector, what is the situation right now with COVID across Africa, if you can give me a sense of that?
No, absolutely. It's interesting because one part of the work we've done in South Africa, we've started what we're calling the chat series, and it's premised on sustaining the voice of hope. So since COVID started, we have been into creative across Africa. So Ghana, Nigeria, Equatorial Guinea, you name it, South Africa. In fact, this week we're talking to someone from Equatorial Guinea. The whole idea of that was, we always say in the creative industry, we don't spend enough time observing and understanding the problem. Remember, the thrust of the work that I do is based on systems thinking, which is meant to change mindsets. You can't change mindsets without having accurate data or having made the necessary observations. That being said, generally the creative industries across Africa can be defined by a couple of words. One is the agility, two is the resilience, and number three is the collaborative efforts that are going across industry. So when you look at what has happened, a lot of the creative industries have taken their work online, right? And we now talk about issues of monetization of digital arts, and how do we now prepare a different regime of intellectual property that will answer and respond to the digitalization of creative art. So the creative industries across Africa, for me, they are thriving in that it's okay in a point where you're entering a new realm of working or cooperation to give things for free as you build your market. So most creators are in a space where they are actually attracting new audiences, building new products. And the question now is, where we get to the tip of that is, how will we now work to monetize that momentum? So it's been very good seeing how resilient the industry has been, the new products that have been put out on the market, and the new audiences, the new collaborations that have been formed. So it's an exciting time as we go into the next phase, which is now, what type of intellectual property regimes are we looking at, given where we are? Number two, how do we monetize all this digital content? And number three, how do we increase intra-Africa trade of our creative industries?
No, I mean, I think the prospect looks great. But if you're looking at the situation now, how are they navigating the situation right now? Because we have some of your members who still are agitating government to open the cinemas and the theaters, because in most countries, these places are closed.
You know, it's absolutely true. You know, creativity at some point needs social, a form of social interaction. You can't remove that from it because it's a social art, right? It brings people together. It connects people together. So there's only so much content that you can curate digitally, right? So a lot of people, yes, we need to open up the borders. We need to open up the theaters. But there's a lot of novelty around what COVID-19 is, how it spreads, and how it can be limited. If you look at what's happening right now in America, where they've opened up significantly, I mean, the cases are going up because, unfortunately, as WHO has done, they've moved from saying social distancing to physical distancing so that people can actually understand it's spread from one person to another. Unless there's a physical distance between you two, it's going to spread. So a lot of the creators, because they are still, and remember what we're talking about, the mindset issue, you are then stuck in a certain way of doing things. You then don't evolve. As I was listening to a professor right at the beginning of COVID, a professor based at NYU, I believe, he said, you know, COVID hasn't introduced anything new, right? COVID has just accelerated what needed to happen in our industries, right? The world, we kept saying the world has become a global village, but we are acting as if there are borders around us. So when you think about the new form of theater, what will the new form of theater look like, right? How will we attract audiences? There's issues of augmented reality, there is 3D imaging, there's so virtual reality, there's so many forms of technology that right now could now be introduced in the creative industries. Those value chains that we're talking about, the STEAM, the science, technology, education, arts, and mathematics. How do we now bring it all together to reform the way we were traditionally
meant to experience our
creative?
But look, you're a lawyer. Now, is it the law or is it about how we are practicing it? I mean, the practicality of the law. What's the problem? Because sometimes, we have the legal framework, but in terms of its practicality and how members of the sector can benefit or participate, it's a challenge, especially in Africa.
Spot on. And to that, I mean, form follows function, right? And a lot of the times, creative industries, you know, like if you look at the creative industries, one of the policy instruments for creative industries is the mapping of the industries, right? If you go to most countries or most spaces in Africa right now, and perhaps it's globally, they don't have a mapping of their creative industries. So already when you start creating policy or legislation to direct structures that you fully don't understand, it will be a mismatch. There's that friction between the two. So what needs to happen, and this is some of the work we're doing with Connected Sahara, is we need to bring all these players, all these constituents of the creative industries and into one room and see how they're interrelated. That interrelatedness for us will allow us to reform policy or come up with new policies that will advance the work of the creative industries. So the immediate answer to that is form follows function. And what preceded most of the creative industries to date could be the policy before they understood what the function is in the industries.
So we don't necessarily need to change the laws. We just have to...
The laws, and it will be presumptuous for us to say we need to change the laws before we actually sit with a system or in a value chain where we understand what the problem is. These conversations are not happening. right? So if I'm sitting with government and I'm sitting with the creative industries, and what's interesting that's being done by UNESCO with the Resili Art Program right now is bringing all those constituents into one room and trying to really understand the problem. So the conversations have started, and these conversations are a way to now say, okay, so what is now? It's now trying to diagnose the problem. And after, only after we diagnose the problem, can we understand, are the laws that are currently there serving the industries, or do they need reform? And what form would this reform take?
Now let's look at creative arts and tourism. Do you think we've done enough to make creative art a major draw for travelers to destinations, especially for Africa? Have we marketed it well? Have we packaged it well? Is that you know, synergy?
I don't want to say that nothing has been happening. A lot has been happening. The issue here, what I find, is perhaps the synergies, the
but
packaging
is not
enough. So if you think about when I traveled to Ethiopia, and I wanted to go, it's called Fenduruka, and I had seen Fenduruka on, it's a cultural hotspot in Ethiopia. It's open at all sorts of hours. I wanted to go and experience the best of Ethiopia, and everyone says, this is where you go, right? And when you get there, it's a creative industries melting spot, because you've got the musicians, you've got the art, you've got
the food,
but when we
everything.
Talk about, you've got everything, but when we talk about it, we actually don't talk about it as celebrating the creatives that are components of this amazing spot in Ethiopia. And the same goes with Kenya. When I travel to Kenya, my first stop after whatever meeting and whatever session is the Maasai market. Wow. Everybody knows that. All my colleagues know that. Why is it? Because I find it's a melting spot of culture, tradition, and you get to quite experience what Kenya is about, right? So the packaging, I think, has not been sharp enough. And this is another opportunity where the synergies come in. We've got digital artists, visual artists, and we've got digital content creators, storytellers in the creative industries. These are the people that all these boards, the tourism boards, need to now bring into the room and say, look, how do we create these synergies? Importantly, how do we communicate them so that people can understand the synergy exists? So it's not a theoretical synergy that we need to know. It's a practical synergy that we understand.
Okay. Now, as we restart tourism and restart all other, you know, aspects of our life, do you think that the creative arts sector have done enough or have offered solutions in reopening their industry? I mean, making cases to different governments?
Look, this is a very dire situation across boards, beyond the creative industries or the tourism industries. But of course, we know the tourism industries have been hard hit by mere fact of the way they trade. And when you look at the medium to small enterprises, which most of them are informal sector where the creative industry players come in, according to a study done by the International Trade Center, you know, two-thirds of the people have been affected. Their businesses could possibly shut down. This situation, for me, the immediate thinking is there's no way we could have done enough because there wasn't an existing structure that tied everything together. So what I see that is happening a lot more is these conversations that are even brought up by being made by UNESCO and at local government and at local levels. I see a lot of the conversation with the industry players. I mean, I've attended a lot from the fashion sector where you hear the Nigerian fashion industries, the Malayan fashion industry, the Ghanaians talking to the South Africans, the Tanzanians. So these type of conversations, to me, are showing me that this is the beginning of us understanding the problem. So have we done enough? I think we can only start with it starts with a conversation, as I always say. And from that conversation, it's going to require us to bring immediate diagnosis that can be applied practically. So we need to move from a theoretical lens to a diagnostic lens. What practice can happen quickly? What can open up? How can they open up? How much of the technology can we borrow to open up these markets? Does virtual reality work? What are the markets that we're trying to service with these things, because if you look at the African markets, most people will not be have access to virtual reality or augmented reality for that fact. So I think the start is good. However, we do need to expedite our solutioning and our diagnosis.
Now, if you look at one area that I would like to touch on as a lawyer is copyright issues, intellectual property, etc. How are you dealing with that?
Right. This is why I'm saying part of the policy around the creative industries is actually coming, is the idea that creative industries come up with new innovations. And new innovations require a new approach to intellectual property. Afronomics Law is a body that is based, I think they're based in the United States, and they've been doing a whole symposium around intellectual property. And one of the things that I garnered from them is there is actually a real need for us to come up with new intellectual property regimes. We are in dire need for us to understand what it is that we're trying to protect, right? Just the other day, we're having a conversation with my colleagues about venture capitalism and non-disclosure agreements, right? Where the venture capitalists are saying, we don't sign NDAs. And then you're looking at your unique position in Africa where people are taking people's ideas for free, they're not acknowledging, and you wonder, so should an NDA be signed, or do we actually need to define how venture capitalists and NDAs affiliate in an African setting? Because the context is quite different from Silicon Valley. So IP is crucial, but what this situation is telling us now is we need to actually reform the way we're looking at intellectual property from an African lens and see how, what type of protection we can afford our traders and our creatives.
What is the one thing that you think this pandemic has afforded, or if you may want to describe as a silver lining for the sector in going forward?
Structure. A structure, Kojo, structure. We didn't have structure. Creative industries existed as, I think in most instances, as a hobby, right? Yes. And you have one or two people in any community doing well. That doesn't work. You see, already if I look at Zimbabwean creative industries and you can say, oh, this person is doing well, this person, if I have to point to the number of people that are doing well in the creative industries, that's telling me your environment is not enabling. The ecosystem is not working. Right. We now need to really come up with structures that service these creative industries. And for me, the system, the answer right now for me is we need to take a systems approach, a systems thinking approach, as we work to re-examine how to service the creative industries and how the creative industries can service our nations and how they can trade intra-Africa and globally.
Finally, what is your group and other groups doing to bring Africans together? I mean, the creative arts sector.
So, you know, for me, it's right now what is a low hanging fruit is dialogue. And there is a lot of dialogue. And for me, that is brilliant. The other day I was sitting in one of the dialogue sessions that we're having with Connect to Sahara, and we were talking about monetization of digital arts, and we're trying to understand the problem so we can go into diagnostic mode. So I said, you know what, we are taking a different approach to this dialogue, right? As we bring players, it's a three-part series. As we bring players to the table, these players are going to form a working group that are going to work to address this problem. I think the opportunity beyond just having talks is how do we now form these working groups so that these experts and people with the right requisite experience can start tackling these problems. So this is what I see a lot of. There's too much talk, very little practice. I am in a space now where I'm like, oh, I'm craving to see some of the results that have come from these numerous dialogue sessions, the webinars and so forth, the home concerts. What is the next level? How are we monetizing? How are we feeding into the policy structures? Which collaborations are we fostering? Because if you look now, I'm currently taking a course with the World Bank that is re-looking at the global value chains. I mean, trade, as we know, has been sluggish over the last couple of years. And part of it is the issues of the recession in 2008. Another issue is now the current COVID. So we now need really quickly to look at the expertise. How do we create structure? How do we now look at the data that has been mined and now start creating some solutions that will impact the masses? And at the core of it for me is also the intra-Africa trade. How do we maximize on intra-Africa trade? And I'm excited when I saw that, AfriZim Bank is also working with the International Trade Center to capacitate micro to small medium enterprise. I think they're piloting in Rwanda and somewhere else to see how they can understand intra-Africa trade and harness what they're producing to increase that trade.
Now, finally, what will be your advice for members of the creative arts sector? Because there's also another school of thought that people ought to prepare themselves for it, to take advantage of the situation and be prepared to take the opportunity.
My advice for members is operate in an association. There's power in numbers. I think if COVID has shown us anything, individualism does not quite get us where we need to get. So find out, for instance, in Zimbabwe, we've done an ecosystem mapping of the creative industries. Find out who the players are, where the associations are. Join the associations that reflect your ideologies, because through that you can channel your voices. Our work, for instance, at Connected Sahara is to connect all these constituencies, right? So we've already got these associations. What we are, our value proposition or the hypothesis we're working with is all these constituencies are not connected. And we are assuming that, hypothesizing that once we connect these constituencies, there will be more productivity and less repeated efforts in solving some of the problems we have in the ecosystem. So join associations, right? And support associations. If you are an association, you need to make yourself visible so people understand what your value proposition is. And this also becomes very fundamental in connecting the African creative industries, because I will know if I go to Ghana, there's this person. If I go to Nigeria, there's this person. This becomes very fundamental. Let the associations come to the fore, and through them we connect, and through those connections we foster solutions.
Chinisai, thank you so much.